Bergen Amateur Radio Association TechNet. It is a net designed to provide all amateurs within our area who have technician class privileges or higher the opportunity to get on the air and to ask questions about any of the wonderful aspects of our hobby. All subjects are considered technical by their definition if they're related to amateur radio, because we in fact have a technical hobby. Even if it's about the social aspects and the way to conduct oneself, there is a certain level of, if you will, technical expertise that's required in order to do that with maximum effectiveness. So we welcome anybody with any question. The format of it is very simple. You will check in with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment. Again, any station is welcome to check in. You need not be a member. Let me drop it. The Bergen Amateur Radio Association has monthly meetings, usually on the first Sunday of each month, and in fact, this coming Sunday is that Sunday. We gather around 7 o'clock, and the meeting starts at 7:45 at the Red Cross Building in Ridgewood. Again, you are welcome to come and partake of our meeting. It's open to all. We encourage people to consider enjoying our meetings and maybe even joining the club. We have many other activities, and we also have 4 weekly nets. We have a 10-meter net on 28350. K2ZO is usually our net control for that. On Mondays, on Tuesdays, we have a 440 net on 443100. In Franklin Lakes, the PL is 141.3, and that is also, by the way, all nets are 9 o'clock, I apologize, 9 o'clock. And then, N2OEL is the net control for that. Currently, on Wednesday night, N2OEL is also the 2-meter net control on this repeater, 146.79 in Paramus. And lastly, this is Gordon, WE2TTT, who runs the TechNet on Thursday nights. These repeaters are owned by the Bergen County FM Association, and we encourage all amateurs in the area to consider joining the repeater club as well in order to give them your support. I'd like to take a quick thank you for Noel for running the nets the last 2 weeks while I've been tied up with family matters. And everything is wonderful. Thank you very much. And on that note, we will take check-ins. Again, stations with a November at the beginning of their call, please come with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, N2OEL.
N2OEL, Noel, any questions? Comments or confusions?
One comment, one question. The comment is KF2ID is the net control on Wednesday. I just substituted him for him the last 2 weeks. And I have a question when you get around to it.
Duly noted, Ben, KF2ID is our net control for the general 2-meter net on Wednesday nights on this repeater. Okay, any other stations with a November call, please call K2BAR.
And that's 2K, Jim. No question.
Good evening, Jim. Anybody else?
NJ1W, Dave. No question.
Very good, Dave. Thank you very much. Good evening to you. Anyone else? Please call K2BAR.
N3CRT, Charlie, mobile. I'll be inside in a couple minutes.
Okay, Charlie, get that calzone hot while it's warm. Get it home to Mama, otherwise you get in trouble. Okay, any other November stations, please call K2BAR. Okay, Alpha stations, beginning with the letter A as in Alpha. Please call K2BAR with your name, your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment.
BB2XT, John, with a comment.
Hello, John. Very good. Nice call. Any other station, please come with 2K2BAR. Okay, Kilo stations. stations at this time. Please call K2EAR.
Zach, K2RSS, one comment.
Very good, Zach. So noted with you have a comment. I'll record that later. And welcome to you. Anybody else with a kilo call, please call K2BAR.
This is K2AMI. No comment.
K2ZO.
K2AMI, K2BAR. Anybody else?
I think a double would say K2ZO. Nothing in this one.
Good evening, Jim. Very, very good. Anybody else? With a kilo call, please call K2BAR.
K2DSL, David, no question.
Okay, David, good evening to you. Anybody else with a kilo call? Okay, nothing heard, very good. And we'll go to the whiskey calls. Any whiskey calls, please call K2BAR.
W4TSA, Daniel, no questions tonight.
Very good, Daniel. Good evening to you. Anybody else with a whiskey call, please call K2BAR.
Whiskey India, 2 Whiskey. Steve, no question.
Okie doke. Good evening to you, Steve. Any other whiskey stations, please call K2BAR. Okay, any station I might have missed, like check-ins, any prefix of your choice, please call K2BAR. Call sign, your name, and with that, you have a question or a comment. Over. Okie doke. Station has one question and two comments. I'm going to take my life in my hands here and try for the comments first before we get to the questions. No, maybe we should go to the question first. Sorry, Noel, we're going to go to the question first. N2OEL, your question, sir. This is K2BAR.
Jerry, our friend NO2T made a comment. We were discussing battery cables feeding a 20-amp rig. I said, well, if I have four batteries and four 12-gauge wires, that should be fine. He said, oh, you should be having an 8-gauge on each one. And I said, look, gee, Jerry, I got four 12-gauge wires coming in parallel from four batteries, each battery separate. That's equivalent to an 8-gauge wire. So the question is, do you think a 12-gauge wire is sufficient in that use?
I think that's two questions. Do I think it's sufficient in that use? Yes. Do I think it's an 8-gauge wire? No. And maybe you can, someone can correct me, but it's my understanding two number 12s would be equivalent to a number 10. I guess two number 10s would be equivalent to number 8. So yes. Okay, I stand corrected. So the answer to both questions is yes. Noel. Boy, that was a little too easy. Does anybody else want to comment on that answer that I gave? Maybe even contradict it. Go for it. This is K2BAR.
The answer can be found in the handbook. If you look up the cross-sectional area, you'll do it. And yes, you're right, on that cord.
Yeah, you would figure someone who aced all of the reciprocal principles and, you know, properties of basic arithmetics would have gotten that one intuitively, but I actually had to talk my way through it to realize that I was second-guessing myself in error. Anyway, so thank you, Jim. Okay, very good. Noel, any further questions?
Nope. I got to go out to finish my wife's dog, so I'll say 73 for now.
You know, she's not that heavy. You might just get her to pick herself up.
She's coming home from late from work to pick her up at the bus stop.
That's very thoughtful of you. Okay, very good. AB2XT, nice call sign, John. Your question, sir. This is K2BAR.
K2BAR, this is AB2XT. Yeah, that was just thanks to the FCC. Random assignment. My, it's not really a question, it was a comment, and what I was wondering is, in future, would it be useful or possible to have a sort of a tube, you know, have like a section of the TechNet devoted to something like tubes? Now, the reason I mention tubes is I know zero about them. You know, I know some of the names, but I've always been shy of 100-volt power supplies and whatnot. And so semiconductors were fine for me. But something, it would not be like a quick answer on a TechNet, but something after the questions are taken and the 10 minutes, space of 10 minutes, covering for the course of the next few weeks or months. Wouldn't have to be every night, every time, but something that would take you through a triode, what you would expect from it. Perhaps you'd be able to use something like LTSpice to simulate it so you don't have to build a 100-volt power supply, but to get the sense of how they work and, you know, simple tube concepts that could eventually lead to, you know, linear people. I think there's a bunch of people here that know about linears and all that kind of shit. But it would be more, you know, starting from scratch. And, you know, wouldn't have to be more than 10 minutes to introduce something simple along the line each time. Back to K2BAR.
Well, yeah, I think we could do that. Maybe there's a basic list of questions you might want to come up with. That might be one way to start it. So ponder that question. You know, what question would you specifically ask? The other thing you raised is the notion of, you know, shall we say, simulation software, circuit simulation software. That could be a subject unto itself, no matter what you're talking about, and that intrigues me as well. So maybe we can even get you to think about maybe making a presentation on how you've used simulation software like the SPICE program you mentioned before. That would be very cool. In any case, John, I'm looking through this list of attendees here, and I'm sure we have someone who could answer a question on tubes if you had one, so why don't you ponder that a little bit, and we'll come back to you in a little bit. I want to take Zach's question. I have something about SET that I want to talk about real quickly, and then maybe you'll have a question. Would that be all right?
K2BAR, AB2XT. Yes, sounds fine, and I'll be pondering. Back to net.
If not, I'm going to come up with something real basic in the way of a triode question. If you don't have something, that's okay. Alrighty. And I'm very curious to you, and maybe you'd be prepared to talk a little bit about your simulation software that you were referencing before when we get to your topic as well. Alrighty, Zach, what is your quest? KC2RSS, K2BAR.
Ben, looking forward to seeing you. KC2RSS.
Okay, Zach. You actually got to wait till I hand it over to you. We doubled. What is your question, Zach?
I didn't really have a question. Just wanted to say hello. Checked in, but I got to go to bed and check out. Looking forward to seeing you this weekend, Gordon. I got to go to bed, so KC2RSS is clear.
Excellent. Okie doke. Well, good luck, Zach. And we'll see you down at the State Police Campery. I don't know if we're going to have a cover-up, but we'll definitely have an antenna in the air. One way or another, you'll see a pole in the air with an antenna on it. Come visit that. We'll have something battery-operated, courtesy of Noel. Okay. Okay, what I wanted to speak about, once I finish yawning, an apology to everybody, it's very warm up here in my shack today. It's only about a 90-degree day, does that? I wanted to point out that on Saturday there's going to be a simulated emergency test, and there was a club email around on it, a note from WB2AIU that was circulated by Tony K2MI. And Tony, I was wondering if you would mind saying a few words, and then I'm going to make some suggestions about possible ways to get your shack ready for emergency power use and emergency deployment use outside the home, perhaps, as well. So, K2AMI from K2BAR.
This is K2AMI with very little information. I'm not even sure of the starting time of the SCT or the involvement that Barrow or the local area needs will be doing. But I only know that at the Barrow Hamfest, that K2NUD plans to set up a 2-meter station. That'll be an Aries station, and they will attempt to participate in the Aries test SCT Barrow Hamfest grounds. Last year, you might recall, we did participate by involving the Red Cross radio station in the Bergen Hudson chapter in Hackensack. But we will not be there this year, but we'll be at the Hamfest. Unfortunately, they didn't coordinate with the Barra Hamfest committee on when they were going to have their SCT. So I don't have too much information, but stay tuned and listen on 7-9 on Saturday morning. And if you can participate, based upon requests by the area's operators, by all means participate. Don't interfere. Participate. That's all that I have to comment on, except that everybody should have their batteries charged for this season and should have some radios that are ready to go to a location if necessary. The scenario is, let me drop the repeater here a second.
Good evening.
W2AKR repeater.
The scenario, as was sent out in the club email, you should read it. It's a very exciting scenario, and not at all impossible, and would make a great disaster situation if it did occur. Okay, let me turn it back to Gordon.
W2JEK, are you the late check-in?
That's correct. This is W2JEK, late check-in.
Okay, do you have any questions or comments for the net?
Well, I just listened to what you're talking about now as far as preparation for power failures. I have I power my handy talkie with a cord that plugs into a cigarette lighter jack. Now, when you use this, it can be used as a means of charging the battery on the handy talkie or as a power supply when you're using the handy talkie. Also, I have a battery pack that uses the AA alkalines. So I'm not depending on waiting on the ICAT here to charge up for 14 hours. I have the means. Besides that, I can go out and get about a dozen AA batteries, and I can go for quite a while with that, if need be. Things like that, I guess, what you're thinking about. Back to you, W2JK.
Yeah, that's pretty good, actually. what I normally recommend, besides the rechargeables and having a way to recharge them from either another DC source or an AC source, is having some capability of running them from some form of, shall we say, off-the-shelf batteries source, like double A's like you were using there. That's splendid. I do the same thing. I have a shell for my one of my Kenwood HDs. Wouldn't be able to run them all that way, but I can run one that way. I only have one shell, and I have a bunch of these THF6s floating around. Oh, my. Been a long day, boys. A lot of four-hour night sleeps. So I'll get more sleep this weekend when I'm at the state police campery. The general thought, besides the ubiquitous comment of, you know, keep your batteries charged, is also make sure that you have a go kit of personal supplies, know where your medicines are, you know, adequate clothing for the environment for, you know, several days, including if it should become unpleasant, such as rainy or cold or whatever. The other is for family members who require specific personal supplies, female hygiene, anything else of that nature needs to be accounted for as well. Also have some snacks. I keep a box of breakfast bars in my go kit. They only have like 8 of them in there, or 6 of them, whatever it is. But you know what? You won't starve. You may be a little on the hungry side, but you will definitely have some nutrition should you need it to sustain you, should nothing else be available. The other thing which I've put back in that container is a bottle of Polar Pure, and that's in case the water becomes unhealthy. As long as it's not chemically, should we say poisoned or toxic, as long as it's biological, I can usually use the iodine-based Polar Pure as a cleansing agent for water. It may not taste pretty, but at least you can have potable water in an hour or so, depending on the level of contamination and the temperature and the volume of water you're trying to purify. But that's a very good thing to do as well. The other thing for the radio equipment that I do, you guys have seen the first draft, if you will, of the Orange Box project. That has evolved a little bit. The power supplies are no longer part of the Orange Box, including the batteries. And that was a decision that was made based on something bad that happened, which I fessed up to not too long ago. RF was in too close proximity to the Orange Box and fed back to the power lines, and basically convinced my my switch and power supply that that it had a problem and it got a little goofy, and now it's in overvoltage protection as a permanent state. So it does not provide any output whatsoever, which is a bit of a bummer. I have since downloaded the schematic and the service manual to said, what do you call it, Olinco DM330MVC power supply, or MV. And now I need to figure time to actually go and do the necessary analysis and surgery to fix it. If someone would like to take it to kit night, which I can't go to, and hack on it, I will provide all that material to someone who would like to do that. In any case, this weekend I will be using Noel's 33 ampere hour sealed acid batteries, which are in little tiny lunchbox type things. Actually, they look like six-pack containers. And we connectorized them the other day to have Anderson power poles and heavier gauge wire. And I'm going to put them on a rig runner strip and run my 7000 for a good portion, probably all of the weekend, from Saturday morning to late into Saturday night, Sunday morning, down at Seagirt. So that should be very fun at the State Police Campery as RSET exercise. So I'm going to be lurking around looking for a way to get a message from the State Police Campery to both the Northern New Jersey and Southern New Jersey section emergency coordinators. That should be entertaining. So, antennas are going to be... Antennas are going to be a gain 10 meter 440 antenna, which I have on a probably about a 15 foot pole. So the top of the antenna will probably be about 25 feet in the air. And then under the antenna will be a, under the VHF antenna will be a dipole 440. And if that does not work because of space issues or whatever, then I have a automatic antenna tuner, an AH4 from ICOM, which I'm going to use. And run a random wire along with a counterpoise for 40 meters, and maybe I'll probably cut the wire for 40 meters and see what it'll do. Basically, one on the ground and one in the air, probably in Endus mode, where we go up that pole and around some tents and stuff like that, and we'll see how that goes. So it'll be maybe only 6 or 8 feet off the ground. So that should be entertaining. So that's our SAT setup. Plenty of battery power and beautiful weather and minimal antennas. So we're going to see how that works. So that's our grand experiment for this weekend for SAT from the State Police Academy at Seagirt. So, any questions, comments, or confusions? And would anyone else like to say what they typically do in portable operations? We'd love to hear it. This is K2BAR. No one's going to have anything set up for what they would do. I mean, Don described his, but I got to believe everybody else has something.
Gordon, W2JK.
Mr. Don, go right ahead.
You mentioned portable operations. I went out to when my daughter was living in Arizona. I went out there. I had a 20-meter and a 40-meter transceiver. And I took out a dipole. It was a 20-meter dipole, and then at the end of the insulators, I had another 16.5 feet of wire, so that an alligator clip with a clip lead, so that I could extend it to be a 40-meter dipole. And I set this up on the roof of the center of it up on the patio. Little porch on the patio. It's only about 10 feet tall, maybe 8 feet tall, and tied one end to a tree and the other end over the eave of the house. And I was able to get that up and only there that high, only about 8 feet high or so, because of this is a one of these homeowners restricted areas. We drop it. And I made that one contact on 40, but I got on 20 meters, went coast to coast using a CWQRP rig, because I was using AC power at that point in time, but it shows what can be done. Another adventure I had was I had a lunch hour operation some years before I retired. I take the HW8 I had in the car down to Fushini Park in Hackensack by the river, and I clipped the 33-foot wire to my 2-meter antenna on the car, used my tube, and connected that to my HW8, and I was making 40-meter contacts during the day up to Michigan, Canada, Virginia, and places like that, you know, NVIS kind of stuff. The wire was only about 5 feet off the ground. So it's interesting what you can do with a low wire sometime. Especially done on 40 meters during the day. Back then, that W2JEK.
Yep, absolutely. I'm second guessing my antenna here, because it's now 35, 40 feet in the air, and I get great DX on 40 when 40 has good propagation. But I really don't hear East cars anymore, because most of the net controls are too close. And I can remember in past when I had my antenna running out the old back window of the house before we converted it to a beautiful door onto our deck, which wasn't there at the time, but it was about a window into a mud hole while we were doing construction. I could hear all the net controls, and my antenna wasn't even above the garage door, so maybe that's something to think about. Time to build an Endus antenna around my deck, maybe about 8 feet off the ground. That's probably what I could do as a compromise on height. So that's good advice. Anyway, anybody else want to comment on what they do portable or could do portable with the gear they have? Let's look around. What could you do? You know, the emergency is now. What could you do? That's the open-ended question. This is K2BAR. AB2XT. AB2XT, good, John.
Now, I have to confess that I would be totally helpless and useless because, so as you guys talk about this, I'm thinking I would be as useful as a bump on a log because I have 1 HT and batteries, as Don said, 14-hour charge cycle. So I really have to think about getting like a AA battery pack for this thing at least, you know, so you can swap it out. And I got to think about these kinds of things. I did buy a DC cable for this, so I need to think about getting that running so that you can hook it up to a battery, like a, you know, like Don was mentioning, the car charger. So that just reminds me I have some work to do on that emergency level because right now I'm pretty much a zero. Back to net.
That's okay. Well, that's exactly what we're trying to, you know, stimulate when we have a conversation. We're trying to get people thinking about their level of preparedness and how they would get their act together, if you will. Be able to ask questions about options and hear solutions from others, etc. So this is all good. Anybody else? This is K2BAR.
NS2K.
Jim, and before I hand it to you, just one other thought for John, and that is that he's not as useless as he thought. He has a 12-volt cable. He has a radio. Worst case is he's got a pocket knife, and, you know, we can make do. We'll find a way. On that note, gotcha.
Well, one of the things that the little tiny thing is most of these radios will charge on 12 volts. So I've got a couple of wires with the appropriate charging connector that go off to Anderson power poles. In my car, I've got a Anderson-style breakout. And on my regular power transformer or power supply, I break out in Anderson power poles. And, it makes it possible to... and various other cables that will go from battery terminals or clips or whatever out to that same standard. In any case, one of the things that I do on a somewhat regular basis, certainly once a year and frequently two or three other times, is net control for one of the marathons or races, half marathon I just recently did, and I'll be doing the New York City Marathon here next month. But I've got a little kit in a one of these, you know, soft-sided airline compatible cases with wheels. It needs wheels with a dual band transceiver in it, switching power supply, various DC and RF cables and lights and clocks and, you know, whatever the assorted pile of stuff that I need to make all that work on a net control, at least backup situation. And it makes it fairly easy. I also carry another one of the fiberglass collapsible poles and a mobile antenna with some little ground or ground whips, the ground flank kit. And so if I want, I can get the thing up in the air a little bit. So otherwise, it's just use it as a mag mount. Stick it on top of the trailer or, you know, whatever we happen to have. Back in that NS2K.
Very good, Jim. That's, you know, good advice, basic stuff. And, let's see. I could probably talk for an hour on my options, so I've already given my 2 cents for this weekend. I'll save the other things for another day. Anybody else want to make some suggestions as to, or comments or questions about, emergency operation considerations.
NJ1W.
PSA comments?
We have two. NJ1W first, and then Daniel will get to you next. NJ1W, K2BAR.
This is NJ1W. Well, I have the Elocraft. I have the internal battery in it. It'll run quite a while. Charge. And I have what they call a Pac-12 antenna that I built. It's the whole new version of, I guess, the Buddy Light is a vertical. I made a dipole version of it. It's two verticals, you know, kind of horizontally. That works pretty good. I worked I got into the 10-meter net one night, I guess about 6 months ago, sitting down on my deck and using the yellow craft on battery power. I worked on a couple of contests also, where you got extra credits, extra multipliers or something for bonus points for working on battery power. And I have a little software-defined radio, which will run for a long time. Output power is 1 watt. I've already made contact with about 8 states and 2 Canadian provinces in the past week. But you do have to connect to a computer, but battery, you can use a battery-powered laptop if you want to be portable. I have mine connected to the desktop here. You can see that if you want to look at my page on QRZ.com. Put a picture of that setup. The setup I used to work a contest a week or so ago. That, in fact, K2BAR, this is NJ1W.
Okay, so immediately 20 hits will go up on the QRZ hit counter for NJ1W, November Juliet 1 Whiskey, who has all sorts of interesting things to show. Very good. Very good, thank you, Dave. And, what do you call it? Daniel, W4DSA, it's all yours, K2BAR.
Well, one thing that I just wanted to comment on is something that I found out that a lot of commercial emergency installations have been starting to use nowadays to get every last little ounce of power out of their gel cell battery pack. Something that I think is a great idea for guys that use ICOMs and that are kind of sensitive to voltage fluctuations. And that's a DC to DC power converter. And that takes basically your 12-volt battery supply, since you're not running on the grid power, and it converts it up to 14.4 volts, which optimally powers, you know, any of your electronics and battery charging. But the nice thing is that as the batteries actually discharge all the way down to about 7 volts, this thing will keep kicking out as many amps as you need at 14 volts, so you're really getting every last ounce of power available out.
Yeah, that's a good idea. In fact, there are some that have been introduced into the amateur market, and you can see them in QST and in other magazines. I did see a couple of them over the last several months. I try to use my Lind. I have a Lind inverter, which I have with my for my laptop, and that works very, very well. I have another one that's a 200-watt one. I have maybe a 150-watt one from Kensington, and I must say it was a big disappointment. Whereas the Lind, L-I-N-D, would operate probably down about 10 volts and still give me about 18, 19 volts for my laptop. The, the Kensington, I think it's Kensington. I have to go back and look. But that one, was not happy at like 11.8 volts. It became unhappy and stopped functioning, which really bothered me. So, yes, that's a very useful appliance, to say the least. Similarly, cutoffs that will make sure that everything turns off at a certain voltage level so you can still, you know, jumpstart the car, or don't have to jumpstart the car, I should say, are useful things as well. One of the things I did build into my orange box was, oddly enough, a cigarette lighter outlet trio. I bought one of those little modules that you stick in your car when you need multiple outlets, and I hacked the cable. I bought a really sturdy one too, by the way. But I hacked the cable, put, you guessed it, Anderson power poles on it, and I've been very happy with it ever since. That seems to work very, very well. So that's something to consider in the big picture. So let's see, what else? Anybody else with comments about emergency power operations? Please call K2BAR, the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net.
Hello, O2T with a comment.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, for years I've carried one of these plastic encased
lead acid batteries, you know, jump starting the car. Over the many years I've been a ham radio operator, more than once I've run my battery down. And since I put the battery in the trunk, I've helped other guys start cars, but never had to jump start mine. But it's still there, still very important to have it. Interesting.
That's a great idea. Great idea. Let me add one other thing to think about putting in your jump kit. And that is, of all things, a handheld GPS. They make their small ones now. You can buy them under $100. Even if you were sent someplace and you got lost, you could relay some coordinates as to where you are. And even if the local jurisdiction didn't know from, you know, that long, they could probably pass it to somebody who could figure you out, and that's a good thing as well. APRS is also another good thing to think about, but of course that costs time and money. But, you know, just putting a simple GPS in your kit, not a bad idea. And I have one in my kit, just a reference. So, anybody else with good suggestions, please call Q2BAR.
And 3CRT.
Charles. Absolutely, Charlie. Go ahead. 3CRT. K2BAR.
Did anybody mention battery maintenance?
No one has mentioned battery maintenance. I'm so glad you raised the subject. Your nickel.
Okay, as the resident avionics and airplane mechanic, we have to take care of our batteries. If we don't have a sealed gel cell, even them, you have to take care of. You know, it is healthy to cycle them every once in a while, depending on the type of construction. If it is a deep cycle battery, we can draw the power out of it and properly charging back up at a low rate will tend to yield a long life from our batteries. But if we have something like a spare car battery, one very important aspect of maintenance of that battery is to maybe two or three times a year pop the tops off and check the water level. And you want to have, usually they have little separators in there. You can kind of tell where the water is supposed to come up to. You're not supposed to be able to see the grids. You know, they should be completely submerged. And ideally, you want to use distilled water, water without any junk in it, shall we say, minerals and other stuff that wouldn't help our battery's operation. So there you go. Take care of your batteries, and they'll take care of you.
Good evening.
FACRT, K2BAR. Very good suggestion. You tickled my mind about something I was reminded of by Noel earlier in the week, and that was that when you have large batteries that are, or even smaller batteries, frankly, that have, small, even maybe a few hundredths of a difference in internal resistance, they're going to charge up to different potentials even if they started off at the same level. So if you're not using them and there's not some form of current load on them, constant load or constant charge on them to equalize them, and they're just among themselves, if you will, with no load and no input, you must detach them from one another. Otherwise, they will start to charge each other and discharge in that process, and it sends one or more spiraling down to zero over a period of time and more rapidly than you might otherwise like or think. So it's good. If you don't have a load or you don't have a charging source on it, consider disconnecting batteries that are in parallel. That's key. Any other little words of wisdom from anybody? These are good comments. This is K2BAR.
K2AMI.
K2AMI, go ahead.
Now, many times tonight on this discussion, the word power pole was mentioned, and I think it should be emphasized that this is now pretty much the standard of the amateur radio emergency hookup system. then you definitely should have power poles on your radios, on your cars, and on your even on your station equipment. It provides quick disconnect, it provides easy access, and interchangeability. So definitely, if you haven't yet converted the power poles, start doing it. I can grab anything in my Radio Shack and take it out to my car and plug it in, and it'll work. I have a couple of cars with radio with power poles in it, and I can go from car to car with the radio, and it works. Matter of seconds, it's a hookup. So definitely, there's a lot to be said for the convenience of power poles, although I don't think they're the best connectors. I find that they work very well. And typically, I use, I think they're called 30-amp power poles. They seem to stand up the best. Gordon, you may want to add any comments to that.
I would agree. Power poles are wonderful. They come, if anyone who hasn't seen them, they have a black and a red shell. There are other colors as well, but the typical ones you'll find are a black and a red shell. And they slide into each other so that you can put them shoulder to shoulder. Now, conceivably, you could get the red and the black on the wrong side from each other, but if you find that you're on the wrong side, just you slide the one out of the other, you know, reverse the pins, and away you go. But they're wonderfully convenient. The de facto standard is to have, as you look at the minor end, if you will, because on those things there's a major end and a minor. If you look at the minor end, if they're shoulder to shoulder, the red one will be to your left, and the right one will be to the black. Kind of think of it like communism. The red is to the left, and the black is to the right. Anyway, we won't go there. See, that way everybody's politically happy. Anyway. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sure Jim and Esther K is ready to kill me at this point. Not to mention a few others. But anyway, that's the way you look at it. But that's the easiest way. That's how I remember it. Another way is to simply go get yourself a rig runner. And there's other companies that make similar products. And they're basically power strips that have fuses. They use automotive fuses, the blade fuses. They're wonderful. And depending on which rig runner you have, it'll have an overvoltage or undervoltage alarm. You can also set it up to have an over and undervoltage light, which it has. And they're just splendid. I have rig runners in my shack, kind of like outlets, off of various power supplies. I have one in my Orange Box portable station. I have another one loose I can just throw in the box and just go if I need to set something ad hoc. And I have one mounted in my vehicle, which is very cool as well. All my radios at this point, I believe, have been changed over to Anderson power poles. And in some cases, I've actually taken the 10 feet of cord they give you and shortened it quite a bit. So I've, put a power pole in the middle of it, as it were, so as to not necessarily require storing of all that wire, and not to mention the voltage drop according to it. If you have 10 feet of wire, you really have 20 feet of voltage drop, resistance for voltage drop, so in a DC circuit, so that's something to think about. Tony, regarding the 30-amp connectors, 30 amps are my minimum. I don't bother with the 15s, and for any kind of serious radio, say of the 10 watt class or more, I just simply put a 45 amp hour, or a 45 amp one. They all use the same shell and they all have the same contact. These have a different back end, and yes, I use the 30s for smaller things, and I up to maybe about 15 amps, and then anything above that, I really do put on the 35 amp ones, or the 45 amp ones, I should say, 45 amp ones, because it's easier to put a number 12 wire, a number 10 wire, or in the case of some of these HF rigs, two number 12 wires, into one thing, so that works much better, and I find it to be quite satisfactory. In any case, any other comments for the net? This is K2B Air.
W2AKR repeater.
Yeah, that's 2K.
Display W2TTT. Remember, left is red, right is black.
Yeah, except when it wraps around to the other side. Anyway, the difference on at least all of the smaller Andersons is just the way the connector pin is set up for different gauges of wire. They're really the contact itself and the body and all are all interchangeable. They just make it more convenient to run heavier gauge wire. On some of them, I've taken the smaller ones and split them apart and made it so it's a nice snug fit before crimp with, say, some number 10 or number 8 wire. And then I'll crimp them, and horror of horrors, sometimes I'll even solder them after they're thoroughly crimped. I understand that's not exactly correct, but I like it that way. NS2K.
Yeah, absolutely. Some people feel very strongly about soldering them, and some people do not. I think soldering makes probably a better connection, and crimping makes probably a more sturdy connection. So one is better electrically, one is probably better mechanically, depending on, you know, how much flexing is going on and how much current's going through it and how well you crimped it and yada, yada, yada. You know, your mileage of it may vary, as they say. But, yeah, I think in general, I think soldering is a good thing. I don't think the amount of mechanical stress on this is particularly terrible. In any case, let's see. Any other comments, questions, or confusions about emergency operations and componentry and goodies? Call K2BAR.
W2JEK.
Don, go ahead.
Yeah, one thing that I've seen in some of my QRP magazines is people putting in a reverse voltage protection sight. So in case you do get the battery polarities mixed up, it takes out a fuse rather than taking out the radio. That's one thought I had. Another thing, you weren't at field day, but I was there, and I have been for the last couple of years using a battery that was charged with a small solar panel. And while it takes a while to charge that battery, it's a naked, it's at least some way of getting power when there is not going to be any around for quite a while, without depending on, let's say, the fossil fuels such as the gasoline in your car or whatever. So a small solar panel might be the thought, not just for the short-run thing, but maybe for later on. One thing I was listening to in an editorial on the ARRL's website about interoperability. Now everybody's got an FM radio, and those people can have a CW or a sideband radio, and they can talk, but when they start talking about these digital modes, there are, you know, there's a whole bunch of them out there, RIDI, ESK31, and Amtor, and a few others to name a couple, and, you know, talk to each other on 2-meter FM, and then they got this new digital D-Star thing out, and that's, you know, how many of those are around compared to how many FM units? Well, that's a thought, too. They have to have a... have some units that are compatible with each other, that talk to each other, Not that one guy's on the one end of the line with a regular FM radio and the other guy's trying to talk to him with a D-Star or something like that. That's a thought. I haven't gotten to banana and power Anderson power poles yet. I use banana plugs, which are rated to 15 amps. I don't use that on my FT840, but on the QRP stuff, I use banana plugs with red and black markings. And I also have a cigarette lighter socket, and that has a banana plugs on it that I can plug into a battery supply, or most of my power supplies have banana jacks on them, so I can do that. But, and
another thought too, and I think Dave can bear me out on this, is battery-friendly radio, such as the K2. I don't think